Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Divine Goddess Radio. We are your hosts, Marie Langley
and Beth Jacobson.
And we are so excited to have you join us today. We have created the show as a venue to discuss the many facets of healing, shifting, and spirituality. We will have discussions on various topics and will feature many guests, including healers, psychics, mediums, and speakers.
Our show will be every Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can follow our show on Blog Talk Radio by clicking on the follow button, and also check out our blog at divinegoddessradio.wordpress.com. And our email address is divinegoddessradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback and your insight on our show. And if you'd like to talk to either Beth or Marie in person, you can get a hold of Beth at 651-900-4136 and Marie at 651-303-0555. And you can also download our shows as a podcast using the iTunes or RSS feed buttons on our Blog Talk Radio page. And also, please go like our Facebook page. Just search for Divine Goddess Radio. Enjoy the show.
And our chat room will be open for any questions, so please feel free to type in and ask a question or just say hello to all of us. And today we are speaking with Connie Johnson, the author of Spiritual Concepts for a New Age, and we'll be discussing her book and her many different interests, which include psychic and past life information, tarot, astrology, and numerology. Connie's website is spheresquest.com, and that's spelled SEERSQUEST.com. And her email address is connie.johnson3@comcast.net. Welcome, Connie.
Thanks.
Well, Connie, would you like to tell everybody a little bit more about yourself and what you do? I know you more on a personal note, but how about telling our listeners out there what you would like them to know about you and what you're all about?
What am I all about? Well, I spent 37 years in the field of social work, so that certainly rolls into my experience in the metaphysical world. And kind of the metaphysical world, I have a co-history in that. So almost as long as I've been a social worker, I've been involved in the metaphysical world. And I suppose you'd say one of the things that's most important about me is that I'm all about relationships, as you can probably tell from what I've done in my life. So that's kind of it. That's me.
Okay. And I know that you're an author of a book titled Spiritual Concepts for a New Age. What is your definition of New Age?
Well, that's a big question because New Age is kind of undefinable. There is no central unifying belief system in the New Age. And the New Age is largely an individual journey and takes its beliefs and values from a variety of different beliefs, including Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Gaia philosophy, science, takes its beliefs from all of those things and honors a subjective experience. So it also honors intuition and psychic experience. And from that, each person has their own individual journey. So some people may concentrate more on the Christianity piece of it. Some people may concentrate more on the psychic piece. There are people who concentrate more on the Gaia philosophy, which is an earth-based kind of shamanic kind of a philosophy. But there are some things that are in common that New Agers have in common. One of the things is that there is universal truth, and all reality is God. And God is variously called source energy, universe, cosmic mind, all kinds of different things. I tend to call it source energy because the term God is just fine, but it conjures up stereotype images in so many people's imagination. So at some times I will use the terminology source energy, and at other times I will talk about God. Because people do like God. I do too. So one of the things that is a common belief in the New Age philosophy or philosophies is that life has a purpose, so that we're not here accidentally, we're here purposefully, and we choose when we come in what our purpose is in each lifetime. So that leads us to the reincarnation. Most people in the New Age philosophy believe very strongly in reincarnation and in karma. So obviously consciousness persists after we die because we go up into the world of spirit when we die, our soul does. We process the life we've just had, we process past lives, and then we start planning for our next journey. So those are some of the parts that are common to New Age philosophy. Another thing is that we are more than the sum of our parts, and this is really, really important. We are physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual beings, and we need to integrate all the disparate or separate pieces of ourself into an integrated whole. Another thing that we all believe is that everything is energy, and we ourselves are always in the process of raising our personal energetic vibration. That's the whole point of reincarnation. Reincarnation is an evolutionary journey, and what we're trying to do with each reincarnation is reach for that higher consciousness of Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu, who stood for things like love, wholeness, and connection with the universe. So that said, what we're trying to do as we raise our vibration is move more towards perfect love, joy, gratitude, hope, those kind of things, and move away from fear, hate, anger, cynicism, those kind of things. Those emotions are lower vibrations. The love, gratitude, joy, hope kinds of emotions are higher vibrations. And what we're all about is trying to move into that Buddha consciousness or the Jesus consciousness or the Lao Tzu consciousness and reach for those higher concepts. And then probably one of the other more important things about the New Age philosophy is that we are all full participations in the creation of our reality. We have free will and all life is choosing. So when we talk about reincarnation, we'll talk more about that and manifesting. But that's later on in the show, I understand. So that's pretty much the New Age.
Okay, well, questions? Can I ask you one quick question?
Yes, you can.
When, okay, say, you know, we're going through the New Age and you say everybody has a life purpose.
Mm-hmm.
What if you are struggling with your life purpose? I mean, is that like an evolutionary thing when, you're on a certain path and then things start to change, and then you're kind of like, uh-oh, where am I going?
Well, exactly. Exactly. And your purpose,
okay.
You know, I think in the United States, in the Western cultures, we define purpose very almost rigidly. And your purpose may be as simple as elevating your vibration. And so whatever experience you bring yourself into, especially people who move from thing to thing to thing, that's your purpose. It's like being a bee on a flower. You're busy collecting the experience and the nectar of life, kind of, so to speak, and that is your purpose. Your purpose doesn't have to be to make a lot of money or to become a famous blog talk radio show person or to write a book and make pots of money. That doesn't have to be your purpose. Your purpose can be deeply, deeply personal and all about you. So most of us who have multitude reincarnations already are living a purposeful life. It may not be as we define it in the Western world, but it is a purposeful life.
Okay. What is this universal truth that you talk about?
Universal truth is based on universal law, and basically what we believe about that is, or what I believe, I should say, because now we're starting to talk about what I believe, my perspective on where I come from, where I fit into the New Age world. Universal truth is based on universal law, which is a set of spiritual laws that govern the universe, not just the Milky Way, but the universe. So do you want to talk about spiritual law?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay. In the book, I've really simplified it. There are some people list as many as 30, 50 or more spiritual laws. I kept it down to, I don't remember the number, but really low, like 15 or so, just so it's easy to understand what we're talking about. And if you don't understand spiritual law, or if you don't accept spiritual law, it's harder to understand reincarnation, karma, angels, guides, ghosts, the whole psychic experience. The whole thing is more difficult to understand if you don't have some basic grounding in universal law. So universal law, the first thing is about energy. Everything is energy. It vibrates. It vibrates at its own rate and rhythm, and it is all interconnected. So what I do affects you. What you do affects the people in Montana, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Clear-cutting the rainforest affects us all. So we're all interconnected. All life is interconnected. And it all vibrates at its own rate and rhythm. And, of course, our job is to raise our vibration. So everything that exists, exists, well, on this planet, everything that exists, exists in a state of duality. There's a yin and a yang to everything. And there is always a third point in the yin and the yang out of which we can create. And for us here, we create out of our thoughts, our words, and our behaviors. So when we have thoughts, words, and behaviors, we send that up into the universe, and we tell the universe basically what to send back down. And the universe is very good at complying. But you have to remember now, and we'll talk about this later, that we're not talking about just this life. We're talking about our total, the totality of ourselves, which includes our reincarnational history. So, like for instance, on one end of the duality would be love, on another end of the duality would be fear. So our point of creation is our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. So every time we have a thought or word or deed that leans towards fear, we're creating more fear. Every time we move towards love, we're creating more love. So that's our point of creation here. So then the only authentic use of power is to move from a lower to a higher vibration. That is the only authentic use of power. So taking power over somebody else, suppressing their vibration, suppresses your own vibration, and that is not an authentic use of power. And people get really funny about the word power. Power and control are different things. Power is a personal taking responsibility and moving forward with your action, whereas control tends to be trying to suppress things. In power, you want to create, you want to manifest, you want to make things bigger and better. In control, you want to suppress, and you want to maintain more the status quo or what you want. So power is a wonderful thing, but the only authentic use of it is to raise vibration from lower to higher. So, and then what we imagine we create, the more we can attend to what we want and not what we do not want, the more we attract it. And there is always an abundant supply. That's attraction and abundance. Those are the manifesting rules. And then there's the rules of evolution, or the laws of evolution, that state that everything evolves towards source energy. And reincarnation is the path our souls take as we move toward perfect love, wholeness, and interconnection, the, you know, Buddha consciousness, Christ consciousness, and Lao Tzu. So, and karma simply means that we're addressing imbalances, both those that we've generated in this lifetime and those that we've generated in past lives. And karma can also be participating with somebody who has harmed us in some way in past lives, or we can participate with somebody that we've harmed in past lives, or just an imbalance. You know, if you spend a lifetime serving other people and you work yourself to death, that is not raising your vibration. It might be doing a service to other people and it raises some vibration, but you still, your soul is connected to God. You have responsibility for your soul's growth. And so if you don't grow by loving yourself as much as you love somebody else, then you've created a karmic imbalance and you're going to have to come back and address it. So, and then there's also past life trauma that is a pretty significant karmic imbalance. And we often come back with that kind of karma that we're going to work on and balance. So really all karma is imbalance, and we're responsible for our karma, and we address the imbalance. Other people can help us with it, but when it comes right down to it, we're the ones who are responsible for it. We get to choose, though. If we don't balance it in this life, we can balance it in another one.
Interesting. Okay. So how do you recognize the karma that you are carrying that might be imbalanced?
Well, see, that's the hard part, isn't it? I mean, sometimes...
Yeah. It isn't simple?
No. None of it's simple, actually. I mean, it's all really, really, really simple and at the same time very complex. So it's paradoxical in that. A lot of times we don't know the karma and we just have to live it. We just have to accept it. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about today was Stephen Hawking and what a remarkable man he was. And why did he come into this lifetime with such an impaired body? Because his body, his whole physical body is impaired, but he's got this brilliant, brilliant mind. And so what was he all about? Is he like balancing karma? Is he here to teach? You know, we don't know those kind of things necessarily. It's often helpful to go get information about past lives because that can give you bits and pieces. But sometimes we just have to live our lives and wonder, what the heck did I bring in? Why am I living it this way?
I do a lot of that.
Yeah, I do a lot of that too. I think, why did I create this? But then, you know, you can live in the why for a while, but eventually you better move into, well, I did, and what can I do about it?
Oh, there we go. Well,
mm-hmm.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Here I am, and I chose it, and I don't know why, and I'm living in it, and what am I going to do about it?
Okay. Well, that's something to ponder on, I think, as you're sitting there in a situation going, oh, why is this happening to me? And then you can kind of, you know, redirect it and think, okay, is this a karmic lesson that I'm having to balance? Or,
right.
You know,
what am I learning here? What am I doing? Because a lot of times what we'll do, especially those of us who are living now and in the United States, which is really a cushy place to live compared to many, many places we've lived, is we bring in situations that reflect trauma or imbalance in past lives so that on a soul level, we're experiencing that, but not in its intensity and not in its depth. So that we can, and here we have the luxury of good friends. We don't have to worry that the government is going to come in and shoot us if we say something like the three of us are talking about. So we have more luxury in this lifetime to deal with those past life traumas. In some of our past lives, it was hard to deal with them because we were having more. And but, you know, we bring ourselves into places of rest, but all the time where we can deal with what's happened and kind of recover those
what
kind of
your
things.
What would insight be with, you know, just because this is what so many people are going through, I'd say a good portion of the population, is with finances. What do you think the karma on that would be, or the what is it that people are supposed to get out of that?
Well, you know, finances have been historically, and here in the United States too, we're really reflecting this. Historically, there have been the rich and the poor. There have been people who have had a lot, and there are people who have had virtually nothing. And I think, and that's where we are right now, is where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class is like struggling to maintain itself. So I think all of us are dealing with, in a certain sense, what is abundance, what is money, how valuable is money, how much is too much, how much is not enough, how much do we share? You know, again, we're looking at those principles of generosity and who's being generous, who's not being generous, and taking responsibility for our finances, and how, and again, how much do we think we need? And is money going to make us happy? What makes us happy? Now, I know money does make me happy. I like it.
Say, I think it would make me happy.
We're
nodding
our heads over here going, yes.
Right. Right. But, you know, are we so focused on the money part that we forget the other beautiful, wonderful things that we have? You know, sometimes I get focused enough on money so that I work too hard and too long. And that's, you know, am I busy neglecting people that I love because I'm working for more money, how much is enough? So I think we're all dealing, well, so many of us are dealing with that. And, you know, we, the three of us, have put ourselves in the middle class, so we're not people, or Beth, are we struggling to maintain ourselves? Okay, so the three of us are struggling to maintain our position in the middle class. While other people are accumulating wealth beyond measure, practically.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that is a universal planetary question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you did a very good job of responding.
Well, and I think, too, it's interesting how people who are light workers and are trying to bring love and good to the planet are the ones that seem to be struggling financially. And what I see is a lot of, you know, the people that are making it have, you know, I see sometimes questionable ethics. I see a lot of things that are not of light.
Right.
So it really makes you sit back and go, well, shouldn't the good people be getting that instead of the bad people, quote unquote? So
true, but then on the other hand, are we, because as I've said to many people, you're probably not going to get rich in this world unless you're willing to focus on the money part. And as soon as people start focusing on the money part, it's been my observation that they lose sight of the psychic light worker part.
Yes.
And yes, they can make a lot of money, but what are they doing? Are they creating, are we here to balance some karma? Are we here to be of service to people because we need to be? I don't know. I don't know why I'm here. But I've been of service to people my whole life, so obviously that's a part, huge part. And so what am I here for? And what are they here for, the people who are deciding to make money off of it? Are they creating more karma when they're supposed to be balancing it, or what? You know, in the meantime, I have wonderful friends. I have a wonderful family. I live in a place that, you know, there are no chinks in the wall. The air doesn't whistle through. I have enough. I have food to eat. I have a car to drive, you know. So, I don't, you know, I can't really answer that question. I can just tell you what I think.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
It gives me peace of mind, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Right, right. And that, you know, we are exactly where we're supposed to be, especially people who are paying attention to their spiritual stuff. We're where we're supposed to be. And you know, Beth, you know that it comes if you absolutely need it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, folks out there, I can attest to that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Money
mm-hmm.
magically can appear. It can.
Mm-hmm.
When you think, like, oh, my God, what are you trying to aim me for, kicking me out on the streets or what? Because I get that. I've been there.
Right. And what I say about that is if I have no money, I have really good friends and lovely children, and I know nothing bad is going to happen to me.
Right.
Yep. Somebody loves me enough.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You're right. You're absolutely right.
You know, don't you think those who are really struggling with it, it's because they don't know if they have anybody who would be there to help them out if they needed to? And so then that's a perfect opportunity to really examine their relationships and love, to really look at love.
Right. And who are, you know, long, long, long time ago, I heard somebody say it's not so important who loves you. It's important who you love. Because by loving, we generate love. And sometimes I think it comes from surprising places.
Yes, it does. It really does.
Right. And are we going to look the universe in the face and say, that's not enough, or I want it different? I want it packaged differently?
Well, I must say, Connie, I am one who says, I say that to the universe a lot. You know, I want it to look differently. But I know that's where I'm at that point spiritually that I have to look at things differently and probably have an attitude adjustment.
An attitude is all important. Sometimes the only thing you can change is your attitude.
I'm serious.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm serious too. Yeah.
Well, you know, in your book too, you talk about universal law and science. How do those two play together?
Okay, now when I talk about this, bear in mind I am not a quantum physicist. but I'll give it to you as I understand it. My daughter is a science teacher, and she gets it better than I do. But I get it, and so will you, because I'm not a scientist, I wrote it as a layperson would write it. So quantum physics is now helping us understand universal law in a way that mechanical physics, which is the old physics, didn't necessarily do. And one of the things I have to say before I even start in this is that God or universal source energy created the universe, and it would be pretty arrogant of us to second guess how God did it. How God created the universe is God's own business. And so people who really have rigid belief systems about that, in my opinion, that's pretty arrogant, because God has given us the intelligence to read Earth's history and analyze it and so do it. You know, we weren't made stupid. We were made smart. So how God creates is God's business. Our only business is to live our lives the best way we know how and to honor the source energy. So, okay, one of the things about science, there's a guy called Richard Feynman who's a physicist, and this has to do with manifesting. This has to do with the laws of attraction and abundance. And this guy did what is called the double slit experiment. And what that is he took like a board, he put two horizontal slits in it, and he shot electrons through it. And when he did it in a stimulus-free environment, those electrons came out in a wave pattern, which is totally not what you would expect. You would expect them to come out horizontally and corresponding to the slits.
Right. Yeah.
But as soon as you started to observe it, you were in the room with it when you did it, you started to record it, started to measure it, it did exactly what you thought it would do.
Huh.
It made two horizontal slits on the wall. So basically what that tells us is energy exists in a state of pure potential, and it's only when you interact with it or observe it or measure it that you affect it. But you do affect it. You do affect it.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
I just had a ding, 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 ding go off.
Did you?
Yep.
We love those. They're as good as getting goosebumps.
I'm telling you, mayday, mayday.
Well, not mayday, Beth. We're supposed to be...
No, it's where they're getting my attention. Would take that word for me to pay attention to it.
Oh, yes. Steer the ship this way.
Yes.
You're in rocky waters. Steer it this way. Yeah. Okay,
right.
And then the other thing that I totally, totally love is by Candace Pert. And she was in The Secret and in What the Bleep. So both of those movies, but especially What the Bleep, I would recommend. And she's a pharmacologist, and she talks about thoughts and emotions and what they do. So when we have thoughts, we have emotions that tie themselves to the thoughts, and the thoughts and emotions transform into neuropeptides in the brain. So those neuropeptides go through our bloodstream and attach to cell receptors that are specifically designed for those thoughts and emotions. So the more you move your thoughts into the positive higher vibrations, the more receptors you're going to create for those. If you want to live in vengeance and despair and bitterness and those kind of things, you're going to create more receptors for those. So it's about attracting, it's about creating, it is about creating your own reality. And that's attitude. That's attitude. And the better attitude we have, the more we can generate those higher vibrating thoughts and emotions, the better off we're going to be. And the more we're going to attract that in kind.
Wow. Isn't that interesting how that ties into your physical body? Interesting.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So wise, Connie.
Wow. See, well,
so
you have to remember I spent almost 40 years playing around in the metaphysical world and being a social worker. So it's not like I didn't have all kinds of stuff to look at every single day of my life and wonder, what? How come?
Well, you know, on that note then, how do personal energies relate to relationships then? What would you say to that?
Okay, so what I'm going to talk about here is creating in other people's realities and etheric cording, because we're talking about energy and what we create. And basically, we have charge of our own lives. We cannot create in another person's reality unless they want us to, unless they invite us in and give us permission and participate with us. So basically our job is always to raise our own vibration, and we raise our own vibration often in service to others, but we can also not raise our vibration by giving service to people who shouldn't have it. And so here I always like to give the allegory or the metaphor for the bum in the ditch. And I like this metaphor so much, I even had Vistaprint print up cards for me to give to people. So when you meet a bum in the ditch, the bum in the ditch, and that stands for anybody who's asking for your help in any way, in any way. The first thing you say to yourself is that person there for me to serve? Because maybe that person is there for you to serve. Maybe you're supposed to offer up something to that person. And you'll know that by how that person attends to their own journey. So if they're not attending to their own journey and their point is to offload it on you and make a bum out of you, or they have a million excuses why they can't move out of that energy or whatever, that bum is not there for you to serve. That person is toxic to your growth, and you have to be very careful. Now, if this is a person that is really close to you, is related to you, then it becomes more difficult. So you have to think about how are you going to love that person but love them at a greater distance. Okay, so then the other two things you look at is, does the bum want the ditch? Some people want to live in misery. Some people embrace it. They get a lot out of it. They get people to feel sorry for them. They get people to do their work for them. So, you know, if the bum wants a ditch, then let them have it. But you don't have to get them out of the ditch. And then the third thing is, does the bum need the ditch? And is this a karmic journey? And you'll know that if all your efforts are in vain. So then stop. Stop doing. And, you know, you can always love people, but love them from a distance. So those people who want or need the ditch anyway.
I want to fill my ditch up.
What?
My last relationship was a big bum in the ditch.
Right, exactly. And credit to you.
All three levels.
Credit to you that you looked at this relationship finally and said, well, he either wants or needs a ditch, but I am so out of here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly where
I got. Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yep. So then if we try to create in another person's reality, well, let's see. Let me back up and talk about auras and boundaries. Okay, so an aura is a personal boundary that surrounds every single person. And the aura kind of defines where we stop and someone else starts. So etheric cording is when we merge our aura with someone else's and we attempt to create in their reality. These are really powerful cords, and they're almost without exception pathological. They're not good cords. In social work, we often call them codependents, or, you know, there's all kind of good pathological words we have in social work for them. Law enforcement has their own. Stalking, that would be, that kind of stuff. And those are the extremes. We can do it just by, you know, every time one of our friends tells us something that we think they should be doing differently, by jumping in and telling them they should be doing it differently. That's a minor etheric cord, but nonetheless it is an etheric cord. We're looking at our friend and saying, your journey is incorrect. I know how you should do your journey. And it's not like that.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as painful as some people's journeys are to us, they're their journeys. And we have to honor them. We have to give them their dignity and their respect. And we can always say our opinion. And we can always, you know, if it's somebody we're really close to, we can demand, we can threaten, we can do all kinds of things. But really, when it comes right down to it, if we're starting to do that, we have created an etheric cord already. And we better start looking at it.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have, like, say you have a girlfriend that is always coming to you and telling you the same stories and, you know, I have the same problem, and you give them advice and they don't listen and they keep coming to you with the same story, at that point you just say to yourself mainly, or I don't know, do you tell that person you know what? I don't want to hear this story anymore.
That's what I say.
What I have to say.
I have a very, very, very dear friend who, 20 years ago, was coming to me with the same story over and over and over and again. And I finally said to her, "I love you very, very much. I cannot listen to this anymore. You need to go to therapy."
Mm-hmm.
And then what she does with it is her business. To her credit, she went to therapy, and I don't hear that story anymore.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, yes, I think you say to people, you're really stuck, and you're asking me to help you in a way that I can't do it, and I can't listen to this anymore. So if you need to talk about this, you need to find a different audience, and you and I can go out and have coffee or have a glass of wine, go to a movie, have a good time, but I am not going to talk to you about this anymore.
Okay. So if you've created that etheric cord, then once you do that, do you have to cut it?
You have to cut it or dissolve it in some way. And, you know, there again, we look at our thoughts, our emotions, and our behavior. And for, you know, there are people out there who will help you cut those cords. And I don't believe any other person can cut a cord for you, but what they do is bring it into your focus, so that you can make it your intention and give it attention, and so that you can make it real for yourself. So I find those people to be absolutely helpful, because they can give me little processes to do it. We can discuss it. It makes it real. But then once you leave, you have to do the work. You have to change your behavior. You have to change your thoughts about it. And by changing your thoughts, maybe you need to stop thinking, I have to be there for this person. This person needs me. Instead, look at that person and say, this person has just about used me up, and I'm really tired, and this is a bum who either wants or needs the ditch, not there for me to serve. So that would be a way you change your thoughts, and then you can change your emotions, because often the emotion that goes with that when we start feeling used up is resentment and bitterness and anger. And you can try to release those and say, she gets to have her own journey and I don't have to participate. And you can try to move yourself more into a place where you feel calmer, tranquil, take your power and say to this person, if you start talking about this, I am going to leave. I'm physically going to leave. And you can call me tomorrow and we'll set up something else. But if you talk about it, I'm going to leave again. You know, you have to take your power. And that's hard, because that means we have to speak our truth. And we are not taught in this culture to speak our truth. And often when we do speak our truth, we're blunt and harsh. And, you know, we think we have to have some kind of volume of emotion behind us. Well, we don't. We can just say, I'm really angry with you. And I told you I wasn't going to participate in this anymore, and yet you're dragging me into it, and so I'm going to leave. I want you to know I care about you, but I'm not going to stay here. And call me when you're ready to have a different kind of conversation with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and when you're doing, I mean, I know we talked about before, a little bit earlier, about how, you know, our bodies are tied into all these energies.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, when you're going through something like this, or you're, you know, having to deal with all this, does disease result from this? I mean,
certainly,
is disease
absolutely, yeah,
related to that.
It can be, yep, absolutely, because what you're harming your body by doing these things. And now when I talk about this, we all do have to bear in mind we have X amount of time in each lifetime, and eventually something is going to kill us. So, you know, it's not like we're supposed to entirely avoid disease or illness or accident or pain. But if there are certain reasons why we have physical symptoms, and again, I was thinking about Stephen Hawking, and why would he come in with this impaired body, but oh well.
Well, because you know what? It's funny. We were talking about him at an expo earlier today.
Really?
I find very interesting.
Really? Okay, yep. So Stephen Hawking is obviously important to all three of us. We'll have to think about that later. So disease is a metaphor. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about symptoms as metaphors for something else. So if you're creating things in your body, what is it a metaphor for? So sometimes we have disease or things because disease or pain or things like that because it's a karmic kind of a thing. And when we have disease or pain or illness or something as a metaphor, one of the first things to just pay attention to is we have that because it's a time to be reflective, it's a time to contemplate, it's a time to think and explore about why we might have that, and it is never a time to blame either ourselves or other people. It's just a time to take stock is kind of what it is. So it gives us an opportunity to change, or it gives us an opportunity to accept it and decide what we're going to do. So some of the metaphors.
That's very true. Very true.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are so, we have so many sayings about them already in the culture, which, you know, the culture has its own wisdom. It has its own foolishness, but it has its own wisdom as well. So if you have neck pain, think of what we say about necks in our culture. He has a stiff neck. I'm going to stick my neck out. Mm-hmm. You know, those kind of things. So colds, being left out in the cold, or personal neglect because too much is happening in your world. So you're not taking care of yourself, so you're feeling left out in the cold. Diarrhea, my favorite, letting go too soon. Constipation, another favorite, hanging on too long.
Oh, gosh.
But, you know, if you're going to talk about your body, these are parts of your body.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
so in things like stomach complaints, I can't stomach it, or I bit off more than I could chew. You know, think of the cultural wisdom about that. Urinary complaints. Being pissed off.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I am. So, and a lot of times, why we have these diseases as metaphors is because we're not looking at it. We're not looking at it. So you might be so angry with someone and feeling like, thinking, it's not nice to be angry. I'm going to try to be a nicer person. I'm going to try to love this person, blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, you are so angry, you want to pop them a good one. But you're not acknowledging it. So your body says, hey, you, you're pissed off. I'm going to give you a symptom.
Oh, my God, I just got a ding, 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 ding. That's why I had kidney stones in my relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Just makes total sense.
Yep. Right. And, you know, with those kind of things, we can do things about them. We can address those things.
What would you say, Connie, to the population of Americans that were so overweight? What's your feedback on that?
Well, I think that has to do with fiddling while Rome burns, because overweight often has to do with cushioning yourself from what's going on around you. So it's a different way. It's a way to get pleasure that's quick and easy. And you don't have to do much, especially here in the United States. I mean, you can go out and buy a bag of chips and go to McDonald's and whatever. It's pretty easy to be overweight in America. But I think most of it has to do with shielding yourself from what's happening in your environment. And, you know, I think, this is a personal opinion, but I think we are fiddling while Rome burns. And there's some pretty significant societal, cultural issues that should be being addressed that are not being addressed. And, of course, that said, this is a whole other talk show, though.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world is run by adolescent souls who are interested in power, status, wealth, and the accumulation of goods.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that are in charge, so, you know, they run the world because they want to. Most of the rest of us don't want to. So I think that overweight has to do with that. It's an easy way to get pleasure and not look at your environmental problems. It makes them go away. I mean, you know, we all know, I know, that if I'm sad or upset or something like that and I have chocolate, I feel better.
Yep.
The problem is how many chocolates am I going to eat?
Right. Right.
The whole bag.
That's right. That's
whole
right.
Bag.
That's right. Right. Yeah. And then I don't have to think about anything except when I wake up in the night and think, oh, my God, I ate the whole bag. How could I have done that?
Oh, hysterical. You know, just to go over to something a little more cheerful.
Okay, let's go to cheerful.
Would you be able to explain a little bit more about, you know, the laws of abundance and manifesting and how are some people doing it so much easier and others are just, what, you know, what's going on? I have more people saying to me, what am I doing wrong?
Well, I don't think any of us are doing anything wrong. I think it needs to have a shift in focus more than anything else. So manifesting is about the laws of attraction and abundance. Attraction basically says energy exists in a pure state of potential until someone or something interacts with it. So our thoughts and our emotions and our behavior are all energetic vibrations, and they interact with a potential in the universe. So that's how we attract. So that's what that universal law says. The law of abundance simply says there's a plentiful supply. So one of the things we do in this culture is we focus on two things. We focus on money and we focus on a true love.
Yeah.
Those are the things we think we want.
Yeah.
And maybe the universe is saying to us sometimes, there is so much more to life, honey. There is so much more to life, so maybe that's part of it. But then the other part of it is that we want instant gratification. And
yeah.
So we want to start manifesting, and we want it to show up. And so manifesting takes time. There are things that I started working on manifesting years ago that are only coming into fruition now. But they are coming. They are coming. So, you know, it takes some time. Then the other thing is the laws of reincarnation. We tend to not focus on those. And a lot of the things, when we reincarnate, when we take on a new life and a new body, we choose everything. That's why the laws of energy, the energetic laws, are so important, because it's hard to understand how we could do that if we don't understand about everything being interconnected. But we choose our birth names, our birth dates, times and places. We choose the major players. We choose the major experiences, and we choose the major circumstances. We choose all of that. And then within those choices, we have free will all over the place. But there are certain things that we're not going to, on a soul level, change, perhaps, no doubt, because they're important to our soul's growth. So we may not change them, even if we manifest like crazy. And that's our choice. That is not something that's been done to us. That's our choice. But that choice is made in the context of our reincarnational history, which is vast, and most of which we don't know.
Would you be able to give an example on that when you're saying you'd be able to, you can still manifest, but you wouldn't be able to change whatever it is on the soul level? Could you give like a little example of what you mean by that?
Sure. So let's say that you've decided that in this lifetime, we'll use money, because money is a thing that I know about. So we'll use money. And let us say that what we really, really want, I have a reincarnational history that supports this, so I can speak volumes on this. What we really want is to have enough money from somewhere else, not made by our own hand, so that we can pursue our interests. We've had lots of lifetimes like that in the past, and we liked it. It was good. And this time we come into the lifetime and we say to our guides and our angels and ourselves and anybody else who wants to chat us up, this time I'm going to learn how to make my own money. I am not going to rely on someone else. I'm going to do it myself. That is a decision we've made on a soul level. So no matter how we try, we may not allow people to come into the life who are going to financially take care of us. We may not allow it.
Makes sense.
Oh, my world just crashed.
Well, you don't know for sure that you chose that. I know for sure I chose that.
Connie, I'm kidding. But I'm going, oh, man. I'm just like, what?
Shoot. Doggone it. I wanted the perfect love, and I wanted him to have pots of money.
You mean I can't win the Powerball lottery?
Yeah, honey, I don't know. You certainly you won't if you don't enter it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a part in your book, there's a chapter called The Emerald Tablet that really piqued my interest. What's that about?
Okay, so the Emerald Tablet. The legend about the Emerald Tablet is that it was written thousands of years ago, and it's called the Emerald Tablet because it was inscripted on a huge slab of emerald, crystal emerald. So we don't know if that's true or not, but we know that it was in existence as far back as the first and second centuries after Christ died, because a person named Hermes Trismegistus, who was an early Christian Gnostic, translated it for us, or wrote it, or something. So we know that it at least goes back 2,000 years. Some people think it goes back 4. I don't know. I have no idea. That kind of doesn't matter to me because we have it. So the language that you can look it up on the internet, and the language that you'll get is really obscure. So what I tried to do was simplify it so that people could understand it. So I'm just going to read it to you because that's easy. He has several points. The first one is that he says is what is told is accurate and authentic. That which is below corresponds to that which is above, and that which is above corresponds to that which is below. All things come from the one thing, the primordial substance, which just to me is awesome because he's describing the Big Bang. That just gives me goosebumps.
Oh, I just got goosebumps too when you said that.
It all comes from the one thing, the primordial substance. And then he says, everything sprang from this substance in a single projection. How wonderful is this transmutation? This is the first principle of the universe. I just love that.
Wow.
I know. And then he says, and this I like because it has a Native American or kind of a pagan feel to it. But he says, its father is the sun, its mother is the moon, the wind carried it, and the earth nourished it. It is the origin of everything. And then he says, it is the sanctification of the universe. In it, all things are perfect. It is the energy that became earth. Separate earthly concerns from heavenly energy through wisdom and care, and then concentrate on the higher energies. So he's basically is describing universal law.
Wow.
The energy that rises from earth to heaven and descends again to earth contains the energy of both. Now you can obtain the glorious energy of the universe and all will be made clear to you. This is wisdom. And
wow.
He says, this is part I think is funny. Hermes the thrice great was blessed with this wisdom. He has preserved this information for others to obtain. I like that part. Toot your own horn, Hermes. I guess he gets to, though, right? I mean, that is, to me, that is really powerful.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And that was written 2,000 years ago.
2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you know, we have time for one more quick question. Can you believe this hour is almost over?
No, it always goes so fast, doesn't it?
It goes, yeah, it does. One thing you wrote in your book, and I was wondering if you can explain the meaning of that. What do you mean by crafting our request?
Okay, so I love that because you have to be really careful how you frame the question. So I have one example. Years ago, when I was brand new in social work, well, not brand new, I'd been at it for several years, I was raising two kids by myself, I was working full-time in social work, and my young younger friends, we were all young then, kept lamenting that we never got the summers off anymore. And we kept, at lunch, we'd talk about it, know how sad that was, and yada, yada. So we went on strike. Our agency did. And we got the summer off.
Oh.
Yeah, so be careful how you craft your request.
I see. So be careful what you wish for, basically.
Oh, totally, yeah. I have never worked so hard in my life. It's when we were on strike and I had the summer off.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes, and if you say to the universe, bring me someone who adores me, or I want adoration, bring that to me. And then you fail to recognize that the universe has given you a puppy, you know. Here, you want to be adored? Here's your puppy.
That's true. That is
so, right.
So you would say then, when you're requesting something, be completely very, very specific?
Yes, but then also allow the universe to bring you what's in your highest good.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're too specific, then you start, then that's controlling. So you can say what you're right. You want to take your power without controlling it, which is, you know, I know that seems paradoxical, but it's true. So you want to state what is desired. And then usually when I'm stating what is desired, I always follow it up by bring me what's in my highest good.
I see. Okay.
Which can be dangerous words, because sometimes you do call your karma home when you say that.
Oh, really?
You know, what's in your highest good, Connie? This is a thing you really have to learn.
Oh, as long as you say this is what's for my highest good, that will not bring in the karmic aspect.
No, it may,
correct?
Bring in the karma.
Oh, it may.
Mm-hmm. But you could say, I desire peace and tranquility and happiness. You can say that.
Okay. Wow.
I want the summer off, and I don't want to have to work, and I want to be able to lie around and enjoy my kids, but bring me what's in my highest good.
So for example, when you're running around and you're working and you have, you know, less downtime, don't say, "Gosh, I wish I could just sit on the couch for a while," because you could
right.
get fired.
Right, you could get fired, or you could break your leg, or, you know, there you are on the couch for a while. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes I have done that exact thing. I've said, I am so busy, I just want to lay in bed for 2 days. And by gosh, if I don't get sick and lay in bed for 2 to 4 days, you know? So you have
yeah.
to be careful what you're sending out there, because the universe will say, well, you're right, you've been overdoing, and you're tired, and you really should spend some time in bed. So how about the flu?
Oh,
which is
see.
Not how you want to do it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how we play a role in our own drama with only 2 minutes remaining?
We are our own drama.
Yep.
We are our own drama. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So our souls are eternal aspects of God, and we co-create with God. So how we treat ourselves and all that God has created is part of our drama. And we have to remember that we have hundreds of lifetimes as we grow into higher vibration. And this is a journey that is largely incomprehensible to us in each individual lifetime. But in each individual lifetime, we set the stage, we write the play, and we invite the players. So we are our own drama.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well...
I need to burn my script and do a rewrite.
Do a rewrite, exactly.
Do a rewrite.
Well, you know, the whole journey is a process of rewrite. The whole,
right.
every incarnation is a process of rewrite. So we're balancing this, we're growing here. You know, we attract people into our lifetimes who challenge us. And that is an opportunity to rewrite our script.
Wow, so true. Great way to end the show. Thank you, Connie, so much
you,
for being on
you.
Our show tonight.
Well, and thank you.
Yeah, and everyone, check out her book, Spiritual Concepts for a New Age. Connie's information is on our Blog Talk page, so you can always get it from there. And we just want to thank everyone for listening in this week. And don't forget to like our page on Facebook at Divine Goddess Radio. And you can also download our other shows, if you haven't heard them yet, on our Blog Talk Radio page. And have a great week, and we send love and light to everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Connie.
Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.